This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are theater geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, a podcast about community theater and the performing arts. We have a very special show today. We have a guest with us today, Andrew Goffman, who is a playwright and actor in his own one-man show in New York City entitled, Andrew?
The Accidental Pervert.
There you go. Now, that sounds like a pretty adult show, right?
Yes, or- But don't you want to say it, Dave? You can say it.
But what? Accidental pervert. I'll say it. There you go.
I've taken
the risk.
Never throw unless you try.
Right. But this is a show that you've written, and some folks might think it's maybe a little too adult. But describe it for us and tell us. It's a show with a lot of heart as well, right?
It is. It does have a lot of heart. It's got an uplifting message. It's about a boy who stumbles across his father's pornographic video collection when he's really way too young. He shouldn't have found them then. And when he sees them and watches them, he really gets confused and he has all these fantasies. And it shows him go from a boy to a teenager through college to growing up and maturing and learning that a lot of this stuff is not the way people live, and really coming full circle again with a nice uplifting message at the end.
Right, so what kind of themes do you explore? Besides, sexuality and other things as well, right?
Right. Well, I'll give you an example. We had and it's based on my life and my story. And we had a cleaning lady come. Both my parents worked, and my cleaning lady came since I was born. Mm-hmm. And I remember after I stumbled over my dad's video collection, and I saw one of these movies. It was called Laid Service, which was a very good one. I recommend it.
Thanks.
But and I was about 10 years old when I found my dad's collection. I start looking at our cleaning lady differently. Uh-huh. And I had never thought these thoughts before, but in Laid Service, she goes into the boss's bedroom. He's under the covers. He's naked. She ends up pulling up the covers. The music comes on, and before you know it, they cut to another scene. So I start thinking, how can I get my cleaning lady in my room with me? And I was like, oh, I know. You know, I'll make my room really messy. It'll be like bait. And then I'll get naked. And I'll hide under the covers, and I'll wait for her to come in. And, like, I had never thought about these things before I started watching these tapes. Now, I don't want to ruin the show for you. You should actually come see the show to see what actually happens. But it was very interesting what happened with me and my cleaning lady, Nettie.
And you were 11 when this happened. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it started when I was 10. Okay. And then, yes, there were scenes when I was 11 as well, and... And, there was a girls in high school that I looked at differently. And I was like, I was thinking to myself, you mean cheerleaders really don't stumble into the wrong locker room?
You're all laughing like you've already seen these videos.
Okay.
Do you find Andrew?
Marcia's starting to look at us in a whole new different light here. I think is what's going on.
Do you find this is appealing more to guys who have a tendency, I guess, towards porno? I mean, or more than maybe women, or women used to anyway. Or is it really kind of cutting across the sexual boundaries there?
I originally thought it would be more for guys. There have been more women that come to the show, and it's for both, and it does cross over. But I was really surprised, and I would say that there are more women, and it's really for, I mean, young adults up until, you know, senior citizens. Just I think everybody can relate. They have some kind of awakening that they went through. And I've heard guys after the show, they're going like, yo, dude, that was my story up there you're telling. Uh-huh. And girls are like, you know, thanks for the man secrets. We didn't know about all this stuff. And the people, I would
do you
say.
Do you ever find that the title of your performance kind of puts people off?
Yes, I think it does.
Uh-huh.
And people don't know what to expect. And occasionally you'll see some guy who looks like he belongs in some peep show in a trench coat on 42nd Street walk in. And he's a little upset because it's really the show. It's a play. It's got an arc. It's a story and it's got a nice message in it. And it's equivalent to like an R-rated movie. You're not going to get that stuff that you're looking for if you're going to see like some sleazy porn.
Right.
But it does talk about how it affected me and what I went through and just how I started, I guess, behaving differently. And
I think boys all go through a certain stage where they get, you know, curious, they get misinformation, they get confused, they laugh about it a lot, and I mean, there's a lot of that kind of, you know, growing up and getting weird information off the street and from friends and from maybe pictures that you see that's a lot of guys' stories, I would think.
Yeah, that I agree with you. The difference is, I grew up. I was born in '69. I grew up in it was in Blue Ball, Pennsylvania.
Oh, no.
Not far
away from, go ahead. You know what's
go ahead. No, I'll let you go through the joke series there. I grew up in a Mennonite town, so I know all those areas out there in Pennsylvania.
So, okay, but so like 6 or 7 minutes away from Blue Ball, Pennsylvania is Intercourse.
Yep.
Right.
I'm not making that up. You can Google
it. No, we know that. We do know
about,
that.
And it's about an hour outside of Philadelphia. And when I was growing up, the VCR was invented, which then brought videotapes and pornography into people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen before then. It was just, I guess, before my generation, it was just magazines. And there's no comparison between looking at a dirty magazine and looking at a XXX porn tape. And then when I would say there was a small percentage in my generation that stumbled over their dad's collections.
Right.
And this generation now and today, it's really scary because you type one wrong letter into a website and you're there, or mm-hmm. you're getting emails, or you're getting texts and sex
right.
and everything. And there's going to be a lot of one-person shows from this generation.
Right.
A lot of freaks.
Now, how long did it take you to write the play? Or, I mean, what was your process in terms of writing the play, I guess I should ask?
It took me a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It really took me like 2 years to get it to where I was happy with it. What first happened was I signed up and I took a workshop. And in the workshop, I did about 20 minutes of the show. And then I applied to a festival, and it was called a one-person festival, the One Fest. And I got in, and I wasn't finished or ready to do my show. I was like, oh, no, what am I going to do? Because it's in a month. And I had a friend, her name's Andrea Reese, and she did a one-person show about Jackie Kennedy. She looks just like her. I was like, Andrea, you know, I'm doing my show in another month and I'm not ready. It's not finished. And she was telling me about, she has this director that she worked with. His name's Charles Messina. And she was like, give him a call. He's great. You guys can go over the stuff and rehearse. And I called him up. We hit it off right from the start. Because it's tricky when you work with somebody else, and especially when you're going to be rehearsing and it's such a personal show. And if you don't get along, it's kind of like a marriage, but you don't even get to date first. You just get thrown in.
Right.
And so we rehearsed. We're the same age. We have a kid the same age. We both have similar situations in our family, and we really just kind of hit it off. And so we rehearsed, and we got ready for the show. When I did my first show at the festival, I forgot my lines. And I'm going to give you some good advice, which I remember my acting coach, Stanley Harrison, told me. He goes, if you ever forget a line on stage, just start moving and do something.
Right.
And so I had no idea what came next. It was my first show. I was really nervous. And I start cleaning up the stage. And I see my director in the back, just like kind of puts his head down, and he's under the seats. You can't even see him anymore. And I'm cleaning up the stage, and people don't know. They're like, is this part of the show? Or
right.
What's he doing? And wow, the stage really looks clean. And and it seemed like an hour, but it was probably like a minute. But a minute up there with not knowing your lines. And then finally something came to me, and I went and I kept going. But the one thing I learned that first performance was, if you don't remember a line, don't just sit there. Just, you know, do something and act. I've gotten a lot more experience now, and I realize that if you're comfortable, even if you forget a line and they see you're comfortable, it's really no problem.
Well, in the material that we read, it looks like you do a lot of audience interaction as well. So obviously that skill helps when if other things go wrong, you probably develop ways of dealing with the audience, right?
Yeah, I do. And I do talk to them. And I think it came from doing stand-up. But if a cell phone rings, it's hard to just ignore it. I have to say something, and I have a couple lines for that. Or if somebody spills a beer, or I remember there was one scene I was doing, and there was a guy taking flash photography, which made me forget the line. I went out to the audience and grabbed his phone, and in a nice way. And I don't know. I put it up on stage, and I set it on vibrate, and I sat on it. And it was fun.
Do you find, since you've written the show, has it kind of morphed over the last 2 years and become something a little bit different? It is your show. You're able to do what you want, I would assume, with it.
Yeah, it has morphed. And we keep adding things that, I don't know, happen and are funny. And we take a couple things out. It's gotten longer. And
uh-huh.
I think I need to cut it down a little, but it's a good solid hour and a half. It's a one person show, but it really keeps moving, and it's just from one scene to another. There's like 820 lighting and sound cues.
Wow!
Now the venue that you're in, is it a big venue or is it relatively small? I didn't catch what the seating is. Is it intimate or is it a little bit bigger?
It has 69 seats.
Oh, okay.
Is that on purpose?
Actually, you know what? There's 66 seats, but somebody told me, they said, you should just say they have 69 seats.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Now, can I kind of get away from this for a minute, just relax, and find out how it says you started your theatrical training in an off-Broadway show. You didn't have any theater training before that?
I had taken a couple classes, and I got some stage I was doing stand-up comedy, and I did stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what gave me, I guess, my background in being in front of people. But then I did take some classes, and I studied with Stanley Harrison, and he did the Meisner technique.
Uh-huh.
And I did the exercises, and I did all those, I don't know, weird, crazy movements that you can only get away with in acting class.
Right.
And but then I got a part in an off-Broadway show. It was called Grandma Sylvia's Funeral, and I played the nephew of I was the grandson of the woman that died, Grandma Sylvia, and my job at the funeral was to hit on all the women I could. It was an interactive show.
Oh, it's kind of like Tony and Tina's Wedding?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It was a lot like that. And so I would go up to all the people at the show and hit on them. And I had a Tonight Show card that I was the agent, the casting agent, and they should audition for me. And that was kind of like the character that I was. So it wasn't really a stretch for me. I could just be myself at the time. And that was like 10 years ago I did that. And that was my first time. And it was a 200-seat theater, and there were 8 shows a week, and it was a great experience. In fact, the best part about the show was the dressing room, because there were 25 people in the cast. There was one dressing room, and we all changed together.
Wow.
How nice. Well, you got very friendly, obviously. What? Now, I was going to ask about this show, Accidental Pervert, has been performed by someone else, right?
Yes, it has. But Dave, can I get back to that in 1 second?
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, the reason I left Grandma Sylvia's was they actually, at one point, they decided to make different dressing rooms. And they had like 3 dressing rooms.
Yeah.
And my dressing room became me and like these guys that were – they totally reversed it on me because then they were kind of like checking me out when I was getting changed. And that's when I decided to quit. But anyway, maybe I shouldn't have gone back. I should have just kept moving with your next question.
Okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so what – your show has been performed elsewhere, right? Was it Argentina?
Yes. It's going on right now in Argentina.
Okay.
And I was doing the show one night, and some people stayed after, and they wanted to talk to me, and they were producers from Argentina. And they really liked the show, and they wanted to produce it there. So we sat down, and we did a licensing deal, and I gave them the license to the show. They have a comedian who is pretty famous down there. He's got a radio show every day.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Cabito. And he's well known, and they started the show in August of 2011, and they started in a 700-seat theater. And they just told me now, they in Argentina, they were doing it in Buenos Aires. They closed down for our, like, December and January. It's their summer.
Mm-hmm.
And go to the beach, and the theaters aren't air-conditioned, and they all kind of shut down. I didn't know all this till they started doing the show, but they told me that. And then they just started it up again in, I think, February, and they're now going to tour it to other parts of Argentina.
Wow. So it's making money for you while you sleep at this point.
Yeah, if I'm able to collect on it, but yes.
Okay.
Does that say that pornography is universal?
Pornography is universal. Actually, I think growing up is universal.
Yes.
So now, when you do a show like this that you've written, and you bring in someone to direct you in the show that you've written, don't conflicts arise?
Yeah, I got lucky because my director, Charles Messina, he's got no ego, and he doesn't, because there are people that, like, it's really, you know, it could be a power thing, but if there's something that he suggests, I'm happy to try it. We'll even try it in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And if it works and it gets a good response, we'll leave it in. And if it doesn't, we'll take it out. Or if I really don't like it, I mean, I have say in it too. It's we collaborate, and we really worked well together. And he makes some great suggestions,
mm-hmm.
and he sees things that I don't see. That from looking at the show, he also usually does the lighting, just because there's so much lighting and sound and video, and he is really good at that. And so we're working together like every night, and sometimes, you know, you get those magical moments where, I don't know, I mean, it's not funny when somebody falls over, but he now knows to put the lights up, and when I'm freezing here, but anyway, we work well together, and we can kind of communicate without saying anything. I'll look up to the booth, and he'll put in a new light up, or he'll put an applause up, or I'll shake him off, and it's fun working with him.
So you have applause signs? Is that what I'm hearing?
We have an applause track.
Okay, I get it. Okay.
It's well, like a sitcom.
A sitcom laugh track type deal. Yeah. What it sounds like there's a little the interaction between you and the lighting person, your director, is a little like an improv setup.
Yes, it is. It sometimes becomes a character in itself, the sounds and the cues. And we do some improvising. Sometimes in the past we had a leak in the ceiling, and he would shine the light, and we'd get some, I don't know, sound effects, some crickets, but the leak is fixed, so we don't have to worry about that anymore.
That's always
well, that's
good.
The joys of working in some of the older theaters there in New York, right?
Yes, and we love the 13th Street Theater, and there are no leaks in there now.
How long do you expect this show to run?
I think that after August, I think we're going to extend it again till the end of this year. And after December, I don't know. We're going to have to sit down and figure out what our goals are.
Were you surprised at all by the success that it's been having?
Yes. I'm surprised, but what I did was, in doing the show, I've seen a lot of shows, and I've seen people get great actors and great promotions and everything. And everything I tried to do was focus on the script. And I tried to make it the best possible script I could. Mm-hmm. And I figured if there's a really good story, it's going to work. And even if I'm the one doing it, it's still going to work anyway. Right. And that's really what I concentrated on. And I spent a lot of time writing it and tweaking it. And even doing stand-up, I would do like a bit that I wanted to use for the show. And I'd work that out. And things do happen to you when you're up on stage. You go up into that zone and you get some magical thing where you're like, wow, did I just say that? And let me write that down. And I really spent a long time getting the script to where I feel it's really strong and it stands on its own. And so when people see the show, I don't like to brag, but they like it and they tell people and we get a nice word of mouth. And so I am surprised, and I'm lucky, and I'm very fortunate, and I thank the audience every night. If not to them, I say it in my mind, like right before I go out on stage, how thankful I am.
That's great.
How many performances do you do a week?
Right now, I do two a week. I do Friday and Saturday night.
Okay. Do you do stand-up anywhere else?
I have not been doing stand-up.
Okay.
Where did you do stand-up?
I used to travel around, and I did some from New York down to Florida, up to Canada. I was even out in California,
wow.
El Paso, Texas. The way you know you haven't totally arrived in comedy and stand-up yet is when you get booked to do Canada in the winter, and you're going down to Florida in August.
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
That's the key. Yeah,
it's the cue. Okay. Well, the show is Accidental Pervert, and it is at the 13th Street Repertory Theater. Is that right? Or is it called is it Repertory Theater?
Yeah, it's the 13th Street Repertory Theater.
Right,
yes.
In New York. And you can look it up online at accidentalpervert.com.
It's a great website.
It's a great website. Yeah, it's got some nice, you got a nice video there with happy customers. And,
yeah.
And that's cool.
And they're hot too, aren't they?
That's right. They are. A lot of them are. And you can buy your T-shirts and all that kind of stuff as well there. Yeah. So, yeah, you've got some good promotional material there as well. So, and it's running through August at least and probably to the end of the year?
Yes, probably to the end of the year. But don't wait. Get your tickets now.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for being with us, Andrew. And good luck with the show. And are you working on anything else?
That's good to ask.
I have wrote a script for a film version of this.
Oh, okay.
And I'm trying to get a film of this done. Mm-hmm. And also tour the show in other places. And I was just approached by Argentina. They want to do a part two of the show.
Wow.
So right now it ends where, well, I shouldn't tell you where it ends, but they want to pick up from where it ends and go forward. Or should I just tell you?
Just when you thought it was safe to go back to the VCR, right?
Yeah, really.
That's part two.
That's right.
That's right.
It's not anymore. Yes.
Okay.
And there's in-laws involved now, and there's children, and it's really, I don't know. I should leave it at that. Yeah. But yeah.
No, all right. That's great. Well, thanks for being with us. Just remember, folks, Andrew Goffman, it's theaccidentalpervert.com. Remember to check out the Theater Geeks website as well. We've got where you can listen to the podcast and find out about other places that you can listen on iTunes or via some iPhone apps and things like that. And also check out our store.
Where
you can purchase all kinds of things like
great
hats,
coffee mugs.
Great coffee mugs.
I have one.
She has
really good.
Does it work?
Yes. Well, it holds a lot of coffee.
It holds a lot of coffee.
I love it.
Got the Theater
Geeks.
It's
very heavy.
And
very
heavy. You may be interested in knowing we do sell underwear.
Underwear on the theatergeeks.com store.
Well,
if you go to,
I have not seen any evidence of that, John. So.
We haven't. Yeah. None of us have purchased any, but it's available.
That is cool. Is it edible?
No.
Now you've given us an idea.
Now there's an idea. That's really it. That's the whole show.
I think it is.
I think we're done. We're talking about our store. And so
underwear.
Join us in underwear. And join us next week on Theater Geeks. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.